through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy MLK Day. Hope everyone is enjoying a nice vacation at home from your work at home schedule. Tuning in to 710 ESPN Seattle. We are recapping some of the divisional wins from this weekend. First and foremost, though, looking at the Packers win over the Rams, because you guys, I don't know if you knew this, but the Rams beat the Seahawks last weekend. If you haven't caught up, now you are caught up. So one thing it certainly made me think of, though, Jake, is that the Seahawks basically, in their loss to the Rams, wrote a nice little manual, a nice little blueprint about how not to play LA's defense, and then passed that on off to Aaron Rodgers. And it worked out nicely. I really do think it did. It worked out nicely. Number one, don't throw an interception.
Oh, okay.
Turns out that is a deal breaker.
Yeah, pick
for
six.
Offenses
that'll do it.
Against
that'll
this
do
defense.
It to you.
Another one, run the ball. It's weird. I know it's weird, but that worked out pretty nicely. Got some play action going there. Who would have thought Russell Wilson could be good in play action, but maybe he can. Who knows? What'd you make of this game, Jake?
Well, watching the Green Bay Packers control the game from the beginning against the Rams was a hard watch for me. I don't know how it was for you or for everybody else out there that watched this Rams defense dominate the Seahawks. It was a hard watch. But at the same time, I was hoping as I was watching that this would be a moment that would be seared into Pete Carroll's brain. The Packers' game plan was beautiful. Matt LaFleur, what that offensive staff, what they did, is exactly the opposite, Stacey, of what the Seahawks rolled out in their game against the Rams. They found a way to neutralize Aaron Donald and the Rams' pass rush with a downhill running game. It wasn't that they were stubborn with a running game, Stacey. It was the fact that it was purposeful. They found different ways to match up and find creases for their backs with multiple personnel groupings. They got the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands quickly.
What?
At the beginning of the game, they didn't even give the Rams a chance to hit Aaron Rodgers. And they've also found ways to get him outside the pocket with their naked game. They motioned Davante Adams around to create creative advantages, in particular in the red zone and situational football, where they were able to get their best player, their best receiver, 9 receptions in the game, Stacey. Something that the Seahawks struggled to figure out a way to do. They were able to dial up calculated big plays down the field after they had established that game plan early on. Then they started to be able to get some of those shots down the field later in the game. But do you know what really stood out to me?
What's that?
That the Green Bay Packers did all of that without giving up a single sack, without their best and most important offensive lineman in left tackle, David Bakhtiari.
That offensive line with Bakhtiari was, I think, number, what were they, 3 or so in the league in total offensive line production. Without him, still solid, especially because the interior of that line is solid.
Right. And you see Aaron Donald trying to fight guys because he's so frustrated that he's getting locked up a couple times, right? Like you saw that one time where he wanted to pull, he started grabbing that guard's face mask. Just simply because he was getting frustrated. Those are the types of things that you love to see great players do because you know they're frustrated and they're not getting their way. And you didn't see that happen with Aaron Donald against the Seahawks because he had his way pretty much the entire game. Mike Iupati couldn't even step in the way of Aaron Donald for a half a second. And to me, that's what really stood out as I'm watching this game. Matt LaFleur, Stacey, completely outcoached the Rams, and without meaning to, he made the Seahawks' offensive game plan look like a joke.
It was a joke. That's really mean. I feel bad saying that. It just kind of came out of my mouth. Watching this game, it's everything we talked about heading into the Seahawks-Ram game. And not only that, everything that these football experts, the people running every organization in the NFL, even the horrendous ones, have a lifetime of football experience. They know this game. They know more about this game than I'm not going to include you because you're a former player and a coach, but certainly than I do, certainly than the average fan does, right? But still, you knew heading into this game, hey, the Rams defense, you know, if there is one weak spot, they struggle with play action. Hey, make sure you get rid of the ball quickly. Hey, use Chris Carson a little bit more here. Hey, don't turn over the ball. That has been their bread and butter. It's how they got into the playoffs and got past Arizona. And guess what? It's how they got by you. We knew this going into the game, and yet all of it happened. And I have a hard time thinking that the Seahawks didn't know this too. They just didn't execute it. And you know what I was thinking the entire time is, every Seahawks player, but especially some of the core ones we talk about, right? Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Chris Carson, and then let's include coaches Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are watching this game thinking individual things that could have gone differently. Pete Carroll's watching thinking, oh, Russ should have gotten rid of the ball quickly. Chris Carson's watching thinking, oh, I wish I should have been used more. DK Metcalf is watching thinking, especially that little bit of pre-snap motion right on the goal line situation.
Oh, beautiful.
Where they got kind of messed up on the back end by the Rams. Jalen Ramsey gets so frustrated, turns over to I don't remember
who. They didn't
who.
Just motion him over across the line of scrimmage
exactly.
once. They did it twice.
Exactly. DK Metcalf's watching that thinking, oh, I could have been used that way. Find me some space. Find me some mismatches. And every single one of them are right.
They are. And to the point of, you know, Pete Carroll, if he was thinking, gosh, if we could just get the ball out of our hands quicker, I think it was more of the offensive play calling than anything else. And that's the part where I look at this group moving forward is hopefully that this Rams game, this Green Bay Packers versus the Rams is a moment that is seared into Pete Carroll's brain, because this is an opportunity that was missed, and this was a game plan that the Seahawks could have executed. It's not that the Green Bay Packers had everything that the Seahawks didn't have. It's the Seahawks have comparable talent. The Seahawks have a comparable quarterback to what Green Bay. Offensive line, certainly not.
But I get what you're saying.
But you
skill
could.
Skill position players, certainly. Skill
position players, yeah. You would have helped your offensive line better if you would have found ways to run the ball and be more effective in the run game early on and not get away from it so quickly. And also dial up short to intermediate passes that could get the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands. Find ways to get him outside the pocket with sprint pass or their naked bootleg game, and not just have him stuck in the pocket and in one place where the Rams know where to tee off at. That's what I thought they did such a beautiful job in that game. And those are moments that, as I look forward to the Seahawks and what they need to do with their offensive coordinator of the future, is as you look at the four teams that are remaining, Stacey, these are offensive-driven teams. That doesn't mean that your defense isn't important, because they certainly are. And as you mentioned those turnovers, some of these defensive plays that happened were excellent plays that happened from the defense to cause some of those turnovers as you watch some of those games unfold over the weekend. But in today's NFL, it's about innovation. It's about offensive creativity. And what I hope Pete Carroll goes and looks for when he hires someone offense is that he hires somebody that he doesn't need to look over their shoulder. He goes after an offensive coordinator that opposing defensive coordinators know that they're going to have a whole lot of extra studying to do that week to prepare for what the Seahawks will be throwing at them on Sundays. That's what I hope happens.
It is really interesting to look at this group when you talk about the coaches that are remaining. Really all of them, with the exception of Sean McDermott for the Bills, offensive-minded head coaches. McDermott, though, with A, great OC, and B, gears his team around, you know, where his personnel and where his talent is, which is Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, all the weapons he has on offense. That defense, still great. Don't get me wrong, but he doesn't lean away from the weapons he has. It brought up some really interesting conversations that we're going to be having all day long about not just what the Seahawks can learn, but like, what are we learning as NFL fans when we're watching these teams remaining in the divisional round? That includes a whole debate about Drew Brees that I had with our colleague Paul Gallant. I'll be getting into that when we talk about some of the big things that we are talking about following this divisional round. Let's quickly, though, we have just a couple minutes left here before we get to three questions, go back to specifically what the Seahawks can take away and actually change. Because I think that there's many things that if you're Pete Carroll, if you're the Seahawks coaching staff, you are watching about this Rams-Packers game and you're thinking, yeah, that's cool, but that's not us. And then there's some other things you watch and you think, okay, I'd like to implement some of these ideas. Is there anything you were watching and you said, the Seahawks aren't going to do that?
What they're not going to do?
Yeah.
Well, that's where this conversation gets frustrating, because I don't know all the thing that I just said about the offensive coordinator, I don't know if that's the type of guy that Pete Carroll is going to want to go after. If he is going to want to hire somebody that he feels like he still has to look over their shoulder, that he still feels like he needs to have an important say as to what goes on with the offensive play calls, the style of the offense, and also in-game situations that you have to coach your coaches in the middle of the game, in the middle of critical situations that you don't trust your coaches enough to go out there and just call a play on fourth and one and feel confident in it. I don't know if he is going to hire that guy. That's what makes me nervous. Mm-hmm. Another aspect that makes me nervous is that if, as you look at this offensive line, what they have done, Stacey, is they have done more of looking through Groupon. They've looked through Groupon to find their offensive line additions. What can they find on a discount rather than going out there and saying, you know what, we know that we're going to have to eventually spend the money that we might not want to spend, but we've got to get some legitimate talent up front. Because if we want to play the style of game that we want to play, which is to dictate to teams whether we want to run the ball, whether we want to pass the ball and protect our $35 million investment in Russell Wilson, we're going to have a legitimate offensive line. And they have yet to fully commit to that as an organization. They've done it with certain people at certain positions from time to time that have been complete gambles, Luke Jokel being the biggest one of them, Jamarcus Webb being another one that never even saw the field. Oh, I didn't. I saw him in the training room more than I did in the locker room when I was there. And I think that when you look at those two things, that's what I take away and that's what I learned from this game in particular. And I'm hopeful that the Seahawks see that. I'm hopeful that they go ahead and make some of those decisions, because I believe that those are the only things that hold you back truly from being the team that you want to be.
Do you think that some of it is in their DNA not to do it? Like, Pete and John are bargain shoppers.
100%.
That's how they are. I think that part of the reason they are is because they found so many bargains before. They found Chris Carson in the seventh round. He's not the only late round pick they've found that worked out. Everyone can think of a million and five options, but there have also been undrafted rookies that have come in and made a difference. What would Thomas Rawls have been for them had he continued to improve past his rookie season? He was an undrafted guy out of what? Central Michigan, came in, had an 800-plus yard season before breaking his leg.
Right.
I mean, I think they think, if we think outside the box, we can find talent other people have overlooked. The problem is, I was watching Cleveland and Jack Conklin and thinking the entire time, you could have had a guy like that.
Oh, but instead, you go out and you pay for what, four different offensive linemen to not get a Jack Conklin, right? Like, those are the types of things that don't make a whole lot of sense to me. Those types of decisions don't make sense. And they're going to have a decision on their hands again, because guess what? They're going to need to address the center and the left guard position on their offensive line, and there's an opportunity to really shore up your offensive line and to make it a legitimate playoff caliber offensive line that can dictate and attack people instead of getting it taken to them by Aaron Donald, the Rams, and the 49ers when they get all of their dudes back and healthy again. So you got a real challenge on your hands. And one of the other things, Stacey, in all fairness to the conversation, is that at the time, John Schneider and Pete Carroll also had to balance out a defense, a group of superstars. How do you keep those guys together while you're still paying them big time contracts? And with the Seahawks, you're going to, if you invest in that offensive line, you're going to have to make some really difficult roster decisions, probably on the defensive side of the ball, that's going to be really, really tough.
It's 11:15. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Some developments over the weekend on Seattle's offensive coordinator search. Former Eagles head coach Doug Peterson and former Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn have both spoken with Seattle about the vacant OC job. Of the two, who was a better fit with what Pete Carroll wants to do on offense?
Oh, good question. Good phrasing of the question, Curtis, because if it's up to Pete Carroll and what he wants to do on offense, Anthony Lynn is the better hire for what Pete Carroll wants. What I think is the better hire for this team is Doug Peterson. I think Doug Peterson has more creative, he's a more creative offensive mind. I think he can dial up a passing game that can be diverse, that can attack short, intermediate, and deep, and also provide you an opportunity in your run game to present a really unique attack with a RPO style of run game. But Doug Peterson, in my mind, is not going to be at the top of Carroll's list. Yes, he interviewed him, which was a surprise to me from the very beginning. I didn't think that Doug Peterson would get an interview with Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. But for the sake of due diligence, you probably go ahead and do that. But I don't think that it's a fit, because Doug Peterson isn't going to be a guy that is going to like to have a head coach that's looking over his shoulder and trying to tell him what to do in the middle of games. That's just not going to happen. I'm just telling you, Doug Peterson is not going to be down for that.
I was just going to say, didn't he say as he was leaving Philadelphia, he didn't like being told what to do?
Correct. And great offensive coordinators in this league, Stacey, guess what? They don't like that.
Great coaches, period.
Yes. Trust me to do my job. Let me go execute my job and we've got it. Right. But that's not how they operate. But with Anthony Lynn, I think Pete Carroll gets more of the style in which he wants from a run game standpoint. And I do believe Anthony Lynn would be more apt to hear out Pete Carroll during the week and on game day.
It's got to be Anthony Lynn. His history as a running backs coach. And I know that that seems like too easy a connection to make, but someone that clearly understands what Pete Carroll would want from the run game, how to incorporate that into the offense, and someone who, like, did a pretty decent job as offensive coordinator. It didn't work out as head coach, but I do wonder, with either candidate having formerly been a head coach, if Pete Carroll would be would defer to them just a little bit more, given that they would be older than Schottenheimer or any other OC and have head coaching experience. Maybe he would lay off just a little bit more, but it certainly is going to help if he brings in a guy like Anthony Lynn that already has a lot of the same thoughts he does.
I'm just hoping that the interview process is not over. It will continue, and there are a few that we will go over, really intriguing names. Everybody is available now. The interview availability is wide open now, and I hope that Pete Carroll is really going to work, because there's a few guys that I would love to see.
Do you want this to take several more days? Is it going to be... Would a guy like Russell Wilson be unhappy if they go with Anthony Lynn?
I do not know that.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that what worries me about Anthony Lynn is the fact that he's had 1 year in the NFL as a play caller. 1 year. That's not a diverse background that you would love to have from your offensive coordinator in terms of the guy. Stacey, we're talking about the offensive coordinator that is going to bring you to the promised land. You are in your Super Bowl window right now. Is Anthony Lynn, the guy as a play caller, going to be the difference maker for this organization, for this offense, for Russell Wilson? I don't know. I think there's some serious questions there.
It is weird that you would gear so much toward your run game when your top running back is hitting free agency and your quarterback, who is fantastic, has a contract through several more years. Like,
what are you talking about? You got Rashad Penny. He's
the
first round pick,
right.
Stacey.
Exactly.
Come on.
Right. Next question.
Number two.
A lot of turnover with other coordinators in the NFC West. Brandon Staley, the Rams defensive coordinator, he's out. He's going to the Chargers to be their head coach. And Robert Saleh, he's taken the Jets head coaching job, former 49ers DC. So which team's defense will suffer a bigger drop-off without them, the 49ers with Saleh or the Rams with Brandon Staley?
Can I just 49ers. Say hallelujah? Get both of those guys out of here. We don't want them anywhere near the NFC, the NFC West. Having those two guys going to the AFC is a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I just want to say that. I had to get that off my chest. I am not sad to see Brandon Staley and Robert Saleh get head coaching positions in the AFC. I believe that the group that will probably have the bigger drop-off is probably going to be the 49ers.
Yes, I agree.
And the reason for that being, they have great talent, but they also have a ton of holes that they are going to have to figure out. They have a lot of defensive players that are going to be hitting free agency, and it's really hard to maximize and replicate what you were able to do under Robert Saleh. I mean, he had that group without a ton of starters, and particularly in their front, playing lights out defense. And that cannot be understated or underappreciated. Robert Saleh did an outstanding job this season. I think that the 49ers will miss him the most. But Brandon Staley leaving, He found a way to get those guys in position, Stacey, but you'd have two of the best defensive players in the game in Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald.
Yep, I know. That's exactly what I was thinking of. And at the risk of sounding like an echo chamber, that's the same reason I went with the 49ers, is you've still got Jalen Ramsey, best corner in the game, still got the best lineman in the game with Aaron Donald. So it's hard to say that you're going to drop off too much, although I think you can point to Staley as being a big reason behind that resurgence in the career for Leonard Floyd. He oversaw Floyd's first season over with, Chicago, when he was an outside linebackers coach there. Floyd getting this season to kind of renew his career, did a fantastic job under Staley. So you can credit Staley for guys like Floyd and Darius Williams, but it's hard not to just think like, well, it's Aaron Donald. Although those guys have had a ton of praise for him. So rather than repeat you, I'm going to do a little bit of a sidetrack and take us off the rails for just one second.
Okay.
Talking about Aaron Donald.
You ready to go off the rails, Curtis?
Are you ready to go off the rails?
Has this show ever actually been on the rails?
Absolutely not. Tell me if I am too out of pocket for this take. I had it on Twitter after that clip of Aaron Donald crying on the sideline after that loss.
Mm-hmm.
I did not make any Seahawks friends with this. I said, Aaron Donald is one of the best players we will see play this game.
Okay, what's wrong with that?
My heart breaks for him, and I hope he gets a ring one day.
Oh!
And
no,
I got
Stacey.
What we in the biz call ratioed.
Haven't lived if you haven't been
ratioed. If you have not had more people comment back than retweet, that's what that is. More people being like, Stacey, I was right there with you until you said you hope he gets a ring.
Correct.
Knowing it.
And they're all right.
I know.
What are you doing?
I don't know. I feel so bad. I saw him crying and my heart broke into pieces.
Of course you feel bad for him, but
he is one of the best ever.
He is, but
the
guess what? He
ever.
Got to a Super Bowl. They didn't make it happen, and I don't want him to get back to a Super Bowl as long as he is in this division, I do not care.
Now, I know that
I will be as heartless as all get out.
I know it will come at the expense of Seattle if that happens, but it's okay to have one season.
He gets one, you get a couple more.
Stacey knew exactly what she was doing with that take. She's like that picture of that child smiling as the house is burning right behind her. She's like,
that's
yeah.
Exactly what it was.
100%.
I was like, what are you guys talking about? I don't know why everyone's so mad. I hope he gets a couple rings.
Wow.
And everyone started freaking out.
Number three.
I like this text from the 916.
No.
He says, probably she empathized because Aaron Donald was being a crybaby. And what do we know Stacey to be? Crybaby Stacey! There was some empathy. There was empathy from Stacey in that moment. She totally gets it.
I will never not be mad at my sister for starting that nickname in elementary school. I cried one time. Next question. We got a minute left. Jake, you take this one.
Which quarterback matchup are you more excited to watch in the conference championship round? The young guns, Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen, or for the first time ever in the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady?
Wow. This is a really tough one.
Walk off.
This is a really tough one. I'm going to be a purist.
Okay.
And I'm going to say Rodgers versus Brady. I'm excited about this matchup in particular. One, because can Brady actually win you a game? Because at this stage in his career, what I've seen from Brady is that he's done a great job putting his team in positions. He has so much offensive weaponry, it's not even funny. Tight ends, receivers, running backs. I mean, he's got a group around him. But Brady in that game versus the Saints, he didn't necessarily win them the game. So I'm curious if he can go out and duel with Aaron Rodgers. And can Aaron Rodgers overcome and get a revenge game after being absolutely embarrassed by the Bucks in the middle of the season this last year? That's why I'm really interested in that quarterback matchup.
That's a great answer. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. There is something that a head coach did in this divisional round of the playoffs that Mike Salk said Pete Carroll might have done in years past that he doesn't anymore. And I want to know why he doesn't. We're going to bring him on next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us right now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I made zero friends on Twitter, and certainly this morning when I shared, I'm not going to call it an unpopular sports take. I will say it is an unpopular sports take for the Seattle market in particular.
Okay.
Which was, I saw Aaron Donald crying on TV, and I felt bad. And normal reaction, normal human reaction. And so I said, man, he's one of the best ever to play. One of the best that we will see play, certainly at his position. I hope he gets a ring one day before he's done.
He gets a ring? I mean, yeah, if he comes here at the end. I mean,
see,
other than that,
exactly,
you got to be rooting for the
I
Rams.
Like, that's exactly the response.
I was rooting for the Rams this weekend, I guess, because I couldn't possibly bring myself to root for Aaron Rodgers. I might have to this week. This week is a
against
mess.
Brady.
I don't know that I can even watch the NFC Championship game. I was so upset about everything.
Are you not a Brady fan?
No, and no, not anymore.
I've always assumed, is it because he's with the Buccaneers? Because I've always
assumed. I mean, I really hate Bruce Arians. I think what Brady's doing is impressive. I mean, to tie one hand behind your back and try to play for an idiot like Bruce Arians.
What are you
talking about?
Bruce Arians is on the cutting edge. Do you see the way that he's wearing his mic
yes, that's
strap?
Great. Yeah, it looks like the things G. Scott wears when he comes in here wearing his merce.
Yeah, it's great.
Yes.
It's
yeah, great. No, Bruce is a genius.
So anyways, I do this thing where I like to shift blame onto other people for me.
Oh.
So now I'd like for you to share your least popular
sport. God, there's so many. I mean, over the years of doing the Brock and Salk show, there were a lot of takes that as soon as they came around, people were like, oh, no, here we go. Salk's stupid take on this. One of the ones I think people get most upset about is that when guys leave here or are traded, I root against them. Even if they're good guys. And that really came to a head with some of the guys that people still, for whatever reason, like love afterwards, like Doug Fister.
Zanino.
Oh, Mike Zanino. I hope those guys fail out of baseball. Like every time there's a guy who leaves here, when you're traded away and the organization gives up on you, I hope you fail. I hope you fail somewhere else, especially the guys who never reached their potential while they were here. That's not Doug Fister. He exceeded it. But like the Justin Smokes of the world, guys who were supposed to be really great players who come totally washed out here in Seattle. I don't want you to go to Toronto and become an all-star. Like that makes me mad. I root against you and I don't get happy when those guys come back in. And in Seattle, that's like a, you know, cardinal sin. It's like, but don't you love Doug? Look at how nice he is. Right, Jake Locker's the same. Like Jake Locker's terrible. There's another.
Wait, hold on. Unpopular Jake Locker didn't go from the Seahawks to the Titans.
No, Jake Locker's just bad. Was bad the entire time he was with UW. For whatever reason, people were confused and thought he was good.
He had a heck of an arm, Mike.
No, he didn't. He can't even throw.
He can throw hard.
So what? He can't throw at people.
He can run.
Yeah, Jake Locker being very nice but not good is another take that was wildly unpopular and turns out to be more than 100% true.
I'll say nothing about my former alma mater. I'm not going to win this argument.
Nor should you.
Nope.
Salk, we talked about things that we learned, particularly from the Green Bay Rams matchup. If you could learn anything from that game, if you're a Seahawks fan, or if you're Pete Carroll, you're Russell Wilson, anybody from that team, what were the takeaways that you had from that game?
You know, it's funny. Watching this whole weekend, I don't know that I came up with as many in that game, and I probably should have, given that it was the Rams. I just think that the Packers at home in the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers at the peak of his game, the way he's playing right now and what that defense was able to do, I just thought they were just a better team overall. I thought the Packers just up and down looked like a better team in that game. So I don't know that I learned as much in that one. It was kind of a weird weekend of watching these games and like, you know, it felt like the narratives that were being discussed during the games had nothing to do with what was actually taking place on the field.
How so?
So, like, I watched Baltimore, Buffalo, right? Buffalo, Baltimore. And all the talk of Josh Allen this and Josh Allen that. Josh Allen was awful. He wasn't good in that game. His team scored 10 points, his offense did. And yet it's Josh Allen, and look at what's happened and all this and that. Why did Buffalo win that game? They got a pick six, and their defense was ridiculous. Their defense was absurd.
Yeah.
They were so good and so physical and so nasty. And Josh Allen had enough time to just sit back there and not make mistakes. He didn't do anything good. He didn't do anything bad, which is a credit. And that's an important thing to do in an NFL game and playoffs.
But Brian Daboll dialing up 37 pass attempts in 3 runs.
Right, but none of them were put him in any danger.
Oh,
right?
Man.
I mean, there was no
bombs.
No, it wasn't deep shots. And when he had them, he missed because he's not a very good, accurate quarterback. But the narrative's out there. Josh Allen's great. And look what he's doing. He's a game away from the Super Bowl. And all that's true. But what is his defense doing? Buffalo's good because of their defense.
Do you know that guy that got the pick six, by the way? The same kid that got hit in the face at the combine.
Is that
the
true?
Machine? Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Same.
That's
Do you
pretty
remember
remarkable.
That video?
Yes.
That's him.
Oh, I had no idea.
The best character arc of our time.
So I don't know. I watched the games this weekend and I got the sense. I mean, Tom Brady wasn't very good. Do you think Brady was good in that game? Breeze was worse, obviously, through, you know, three picks. And
was there
fumble.
A great offensive
hold,
performance?
Hold on.
You think Brady was great in that game?
I have to interrupt this real
yeah,
quick.
Go for
Jeremy
it.
Fowler just tweeted out, Seahawks have spoken to former Jets head coach Adam Gase.
Stop.
About the offensive coordinator opening. How would you like to see Adam Gase here in town?
As an offensive coordinator? What,
yes.
What was Adam Gase's job before he was a head coach?
He was an offensive coordinator for Peyton Manning.
Yeah. I mean, these guys who end up as head coaches generally get there because they were great at being a coordinator. I think that you're seeing a very common thread with what Pete is looking at so far. It hasn't been the young up-and-comer geniuses. It has been the older guys who have had success as coordinators in the past. Anthony Lynn, Doug Peterson, and now Adam Gase. I'm not surprised by it at all. And I think it's the a good approach. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be the right approach. But those guys, look, the NFL is weird. The NFL believes that for whatever reason, the best way to hire a head coach is to look at whoever is the best coordinator right now and hire him as a head coach. It's a terrible system.
Mm-hmm.
The best head coaches are the ones that have the best skills that make head coaches, not the ones that have the skills that make them the best coordinators. But that's the way the NFL has worked forever and ever. You wait until the playoffs are over and hire the coordinator of whatever team scored the most points or gave up the least.
Seeing people text in, Jake, you better be joking. Not joking. That is a confirmed tweet to Curtis's credit, just sending this in a message right now. How do you feel about Adam Gase potentially reuniting with Jamal Adams?
Oh, well, that'd be an interesting one.
Great story.
That was one of the first two things I thought of.
Yeah.
Look, no one's talking about hiring these guys to be the head coach here.
Right.
And I think that's important to recognize. The Peter principle is alive and well in the NFL. You tend to get hired to one job more than you're capable of doing. And if you can get those, look at Jack Del Rio. Look at Leslie Frazier. Look at Todd Bowles is having success again as a defensive coordinator this year. A lot of these guys who get high, who get promoted one too many times go back to the spot they were in and continue to have success. So I think there's a very common thread here in what Pete's doing.
Now, there's one other thing with Pete Carroll here that I find fascinating is that typically he's been through this twice now in his history, and it hasn't taken long for him at all to find the next offensive coordinator. It's taken him actually 3 and 4 days to hire offensive coordinator. This is very different. Pete Carroll seems to be taking his time to be going through this process, interviewing as many guys as I've ever
interviewed. You got to make it seem like Russ is involved, right?
So is that what you think it is?
Yeah.
You think that this is all a show, that
yes.
he knows who he wants and
uh-huh.
it's just it's all for Russ?
Yes.
Really?
That's what I mean, I don't have any information.
Do you think he should be involved?
Come on.
I think that.
You don't think that this is. You don't think he recognizes how big of a hire
this is? No, I'm sure he does, but Pete's generally pretty convicted on these things. My guess. I mean, the one thing it tells me probably more than anything is that Brian Schottenheimer left more than was fired. Because if they were preparing for this to occur, Pete would have known who he wanted to hire. The same way he knew who he wanted to hire after Jeremy Bates and knew who he wanted to hire after Daryl Bevel. I think Pete would have that person sort of identified and would know by now who it is. I'm not sure he was expecting Brian Schottenheimer to be gone. I think that when they say different philosophical differences and parting ways and all that, I think there's a lot of validity to that, to the fact that he wasn't fired the way a lot of other coaches, coordinators, et cetera, are. So I think that maybe they were caught a little unawares, and now this process may take a little longer than normal. I also think that the whole idea of I've got to make sure my franchise quarterback at the very least feels comfortable is important. I'm not saying that Russ should necessarily have a say in who's hired, but he better be comfortable, or else you are, you know, it's a recipe for disaster.
Good stuff, Mike. Thanks so much.
See you guys.
All right. He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday on Jake and Stacey at 11:30. You can also hear him on the Brock and Salk podcast. New episode drops tomorrow. Adam Gase, the latest name linked to the Seahawks in their search for an offensive coordinator, will tell you who else is involved there next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacey. We've been talking about some of the names thrown around for Seahawks offensive coordinator, a new one. Jake entering the fold here. Breaking 16 minutes ago from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, the Seahawks have spoken with former Jets head coach Adam Gase about their offensive coordinator opening. They also intend to speak with Chiefs quarterback coach Mike Kafka. But let's talk about Gase, not only because, Jake, the story of Gase reuniting potentially with Jamal Adams is just, it tickles me. But also, it opens up this whole array of who is making the decision about this. Obviously, we know it's Pete Carroll, but in what direction is the organization moving? I'll tell you right now, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, not fired up about Gase. I think we can say the most hated Jets head coach in recent memory coming to Seattle.
Yeah.
Even if it's in a different role, not excited about that.
No, and to be honest with you, I wouldn't be either. And I think that Pete Carroll, if you can be happy with one thing, be happy with the fact that he is doing his due diligence. Be happy with the fact that he is actually going out there and interviewing a wide variety of different people, whether they are failed head coaches or they are guys who have unique offensive backgrounds. And with Adam Gase, for everything that he hasn't been as a head coach, as an offensive coordinator, he has had more success there than anything else. I do not like this particular pairing. I don't think that Adam Gase will be the offensive coordinator for Seattle for a variety of different reasons. One, because I don't think that he has the ability to, for a long-term sustained success, to develop relationships that don't deteriorate over time. I mean, Adam Gase has done that pretty much everywhere that he has gone, and he has not had the same offensive firepower since he's had Peyton Manning, right? And I sometimes some of these guys attach their names to quarterbacks and they're able to get jobs down the line.
That's exactly
and
what
I,
Gase did.
And I think that that's exactly where Gase is in that position. So that one doesn't necessarily fire me up. But hearing about Mike Kafka from the Kansas City Chiefs, he's the quarterback coach there. He would be the next guy in line to be the offensive coordinator if Eric Bieniemy was to win a head coaching position this offseason. So that one definitely intrigues me. But if I'm really serious about an offensive coordinator, if I'm genuinely serious about an offensive coordinator and trying to find the right fit and trying to find somebody that could really change the game for us, is I'm going to go after the guys that a lot of people don't think that you could get. Mm-hmm. I would go after Nathaniel Hackett at Green Bay. I would go after Pete Carmichael, New Orleans offensive coordinator. I would go after Alex Van Pelt in Cleveland. I would definitely try to go after those guys and request permission to interview them with the idea of maybe, one, we're going to offer you more money, and B, we'll slap on an assistant head coaching title, whatever we've got to do to get you there. But those three guys, to me, are ones that I would love to see Pete Carroll really go after.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here talking about where the OC search stands for the Seattle Seahawks. As we reported, breaking 15 minutes ago, Jeremy Fowler says Seahawks have spoken with former Jets head coach Adam Gase. Let's go back to two other names that we mentioned earlier this hour. I guess just focusing a bit on each of those names, Jake. Doug Peterson and Anthony Lynn, two former head coaches. What we've already decided is it will be a bit of a tricky dynamic to have two people used to being head coaches very recently now in an offensive coordinator position under a head coach that likes a lot of oversight. Outside of that, specifically with their fit and their strengths, how do they look in Seattle's system?
Well, I think with Anthony Lynn, that is a comfortable hire. That would be a very comfortable hire to Pete Carroll. Great leader of men, a guy who has been well regarded for his ability to come up with great schemes to be able to run the football. Even when he was an offensive coordinator, he was known as a running back coach that could help an offense develop a better running attack. And so I think that would be very comfortable for Pete Carroll. However, I believe that there's some serious flaws in that potential hiring in terms of, is Anthony Lynn, and this is the most important aspect, is Anthony Lynn not only going to help the run game, but help Russell Wilson have sustained success through a season? Going to take Russell Wilson, a top three quarterback talent in this league, and allow him to play up to that ability throughout the entire year against the best defenses? It doesn't matter who steps on the field, that he is able to help take that quarterback to the next level. I have serious doubts about that. And then the other thing is, you know, one of the other things that Russell Wilson had talked about in terms of philosophy, and this is a question, a deep-seated question that I think will be a theme throughout the entire offseason, Stacey, is if Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson are essentially on the same page, where are they different? And here in cut number one, I believe Russell Wilson talking about how he has a desire to start early I think could be one of those differences.
If you ask me what my kind of belief system is just in general, no matter how we do it, is, you know, I think we should go score 24 points before the half. Like, that should be like, let's go, boom. And like, let's get out ahead, especially how great our defense has been playing, especially late in the season and everything else. And we can do that no matter how we do it. I don't care. Like, let's go win it. Like, you know, and so I think that's the thing that I think about a lot, you know, is, you know, let's start early. You know, I go back to the Rams game. A lot of these games that we didn't play great in, if you really think about it, like the Rams, the Giants, we barely had the ball the whole first quarter. I didn't even touch the ball really the first quarter, you know, both of those games.
So to me, when you hear Russell Wilson talk about that, okay, we got to start fast. I want to get up ahead 24-0 at halftime, right? Obviously, that's ambitious. That's not going to be the case every single game, but you understand the idea and the philosophy behind Russell's mindset that he wants to attack. And he doesn't, and what he said, I don't care how it gets done. I don't care how we put the points up on the board. Green Bay, did they put points up on the board? Did they put 19 points on the board in the first half by just being an air raid offense and letting Aaron Rodgers go? No. They ran the ball. They were protective with the ball. They got the ball out of his hands quickly, but they were able to move the ball up and down the field to generate points. And with Pete Carroll, he's comfortable, Stacey, playing in those 17-14 games. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if it's 6-6 at halftime. It's all good to him. And I think that that may be some of the difference in terms of where they could be seeing things differently. And whoever they hire as an offensive coordinator, I think, is going to be reflective of that. And you want somebody that's going to be in attack mode right there with you, one step ahead, that can start fast and keep things rolling. And, you know, Mike Kafka coming from that mindset from the Kansas City Chiefs, That's appealing. That's interesting.
Well, I think it's because Pete Carroll fundamentally believes that even in those close games, if you don't make mistakes and you play good football and you stick to your football principles, then you'll win. It doesn't matter if it's a 3-point game or a 20-point game, that if you aren't turning the ball over and if you're playing good defense, if you're getting on the field on third down, you got it. And so I think part of it is just this unyielding faith that he has in his own style of play. Secondly, when it comes to the coordinator position, it's weird. Adam Gase doesn't quite fit in here with the theme of looking for that run first kind of philosophy. But I think that Pete Carroll also genuinely believes that a coordinator that can come in here and better the run game will inadvertently better Russell Wilson. That the key to Russell Wilson's success is having a great run game.
Well, and I don't think that anybody would argue that, but it can't be at the expense of your offense being able to put up points, right? It can't be at the expense of your offense being explosive and having the ability to take advantage of the talents that your quarterback has.
I don't think he would say that you're sacrificing that, though. I think he says you have a chance to be explosive when you have that run. That I think he thinks those go hand in hand.
No, I would disagree. I would disagree with that premise, because I think that when you take a game and you're sitting there and you're going, all right, we're okay with sequences of run, pass, punt, right? And we're okay with doing that because we have to establish our running game. I think that becomes an issue. Right, Russell Wilson, for any of the flaws that have been pointed out, you know what the area that he was unbelievable at this year was? First and second down pass. He was unbelievable at first and second down pass. And I think that that's an area that you don't want to see change. Not necessarily, you don't care about the attempts in that area necessarily, as long as they don't dip dramatically, but you still want to put the ball in your best player's hands on first and second down and allow him to go and attack downfield. They need a better run game or a more commitment to the run game when it comes to some of these style of matchups like the Rams and Washington and some of these other teams where you have to center those pass rushes by having a good run game. But I don't think that you need to go full-blown back the other way, back to 2018.
All right. It was a doubleheader this weekend. We know the results. We know the scores. We know the winners. But that's not what we're really talking about when it comes to this divisional round weekend. We'll tell you what we are talking about next.